Hello, everyone, and welcome back to episode 128 of the Salvaggio and Credit Sports podcast. Here for you again on another Wednesday night, 7:16 p.m. And we don't have as much football to talk about this week, which stinks, but we do have the conference championships to recap, amongst other things. But before we get into anything here, Ryan, how are we doing again on this another lovely night for a show?
Doing well. I'm catching cold because it's been pretty chilly outside the last couple of days. But other than that, I think I'm doing pretty fine. Sad day for football, like you said, because of less games to talk about. But also, once again, hopefully this isn't the second time we are duped. But Tom Brady, of course, retiring today. So that, of course, a sad day for the NFL and for you and I as Brady fans. But other than that, doing pretty well.
Yeah, of course. But several moments of the week, I do have a quick football moment. The Barstool podcast Macrodosing put out a clip of Arian Foster, who's a co-host of the show, talking about the NFL being rigged, and people who clearly didn't watch the video actually, you know, were like looking for proof and you know, didn't believe it or whatever, like, oh my god, it's actually rigged. But it just led to a lot of responses where people were like picturing situations and putting memes with them. Like, one was like Marshawn Lynch during like Super Bowl 49 after the end of the game, and like are like in the huddle. There are a bunch of like really funny ones. There's a lot of dark ones.
Yeah.
And of course, as you know, Twitter tends to, you know, bring out the dark side of people sometimes, but there were some really, really funny ones. Like, one was the video of Brady in some like film room turning around and smiling, that old video.
It's like, oh, yeah.
Brady, it was when Matt Ryan walks Matt into the Ryan, room, yep, to discuss Super Bowl 51.
Didn't RG3 have one too, where he was like me reading the it. Yeah, it was, yeah, something whenever I can't remember what season he got hurt. Was it 2012 he might have got hurt in? But it was like me when I read the 2012 script of him getting, obviously getting hurt. But yeah, there's been a ton of funny ones.
I think it's funny. I think my favorite one, real quick, was it was Antonio Brown reading his script about Sunday against the Jets on January 2nd. It was Stephen A. Smith. He's like, "This is exactly what I've been waiting for. This is exactly what I've been waiting for." I don't mean it's like at Williams, but this is exactly what I've been waiting for.
Oh, that was
it was like nothing I've ever seen with the memes. Like,
yeah, it was crazy. I was gonna say it was crazy because I hadn't really noticed until you put that in the outline to be the moment of the week for you. And then as soon as I opened up Twitter, it was just flooded with all sorts of, I saw an Antonio Brown, want to take yours a step further, that was like Antonio Brown when he reads whatever week it was, he got that perfect that hit, and was like when he reads the script about getting CTE and just completely effing up his career and his life afterwards. So it's like you said, there's been some dark ones, there's been some funny ones, but it's crazy how much, like you said, it has blown up over at least the last 24 hours.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal. Really good content. I like the one of the guy, I don't know what show it's from, but he's like freaking out, and it's like Mason Rudolph on discussing the description of November 14th, 2019, when Myles Garrett bashed him in the head.
Yeah.
There were just some awesome ones. Had to mention that. If you're looking for a laugh, go in the quote tweets and responses to the NFL rigged video that has like probably close to 100 million impressions now from Macrodosing on Twitter. And they're just so goddamn funny. But yeah, you know, if you're looking for a laugh, go through there. But I figured after this, since yours is a basketball moment of the week, we'd get into yours and then touch on a quick Celtics point before we get into football.
Yeah, sure. Mine, of course, anybody who watched the Celtics and Lakers game from last week, I think it was last Saturday night, you saw a just absolutely incredibly stupid, funny, childish, however you want to look at it, reaction by LeBron James. I'll get it right out of the way first. Of course, people know the play I'm talking about, the one where he went up for the layup, which probably would have won the game for the Lakers if he was not fouled by Jason Tatum, which, defending the Celtics, of course, I always do. Can't defend it. Can't defend Tatum on this. That was a clear foul that the NBA missed. They know they missed it. But the fact, watching a grown man, LeBron James, almost in his 40s now, roll around, flop around on the floor after the missed call, like he had just lost, you know, his last ever game seven, excuse me, in the NBA finals. And then the stuff that's come afterwards, obviously Anthony Davis had plenty of comments to say about it. You had Pat Beverly taking out the camera and showing it to the referee during the game that got him a technical foul to start overtime. LeBron, I saw last night, because the Knicks and Lakers game went into overtime and the Lakers won that game. He's still bitching and complaining about it. Was asked about, you know, the difference between this game, this prior game, and overtime against the Knicks And then the game against the Celtics, something along the lines of that. And he said, you know, tonight's game was decided by the players in Boston. That game was decided by the ref. So it's, I just found, like I said, I found it funny. The reaction a lot of people on Twitter did too. At the fact that it's LeBron too, who's gotten like 99% of the calls in his NBA career. The fact that they missed this one, and I don't want to say a meaningless game in the middle of, at the end of January, but like kind of a throwaway game. Like I doubt these two teams are going to see each other again this year, unless the Lakers make some sort of miraculous run to the finals. But just again, LeBron just absolutely losing his mind. And again, the whole reaction over, you know, yeah, it was a big play. Probably cost the Lakers a game here, but there were plenty of times they could have, you know, stopped the Celtics on their run late in the fourth quarter, gotten over it and won the game in overtime. Maybe, you know, Jaylen Brown, he has five fouls. You go at him, foul him out, and he doesn't absolutely torch your team in overtime. So you do it to yourselves in that game, letting the Celtics come back in. But the fact that he just, again, was rolling around like a child out there was hilarious to see.
The camera incident was incredible. Mm-hmm. I just, like, I think it sucks that that's considered should be a foul. I don't think that was a foul. I don't think it should have been called a foul.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, to each their own.
It's one of those things where it's like
a pretty divided thing.
Yeah, I think it falls under, and I've seen some people make the argument too, as we'll get into the football stuff later, about the Osai hit. It's like, oh, is that really something you can call in that spot? It kind of falls under that, the foul for Tatum. You know, do you want to end the game on free throws and a foul call, even though, you know, from one angle, it looks like he does foul him clearly, you know, hand on the forearm. Another angle, it looks like maybe Tatum got, you know, somewhat of the ball. I don't know if I agree with the people that think that. I saw Portnoy arguing that a ton after the game, but a little delusional there. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough kind of bang bang thing. Obviously, you know, officials are going to miss calls here and there. But like I said, that one, argue it if you will. I'm in the camp that I don't think a game can end on a foul call like that, especially with the way that game was going and how entertaining it ended up being. But definitely could have been called a foul, because it was pretty egregious, at least to me.
Yeah, definitely could have.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, shit happens.
True.
Outside of that, you know, like, we want to lead into Celtics. Now we do have a quick Celtics point. I mean, it's surprising because, in the standpoint, like, I didn't expect it, but in terms of his role and like standing on the team, I'd say this isn't the most surprising type of thing to hear from Peyton Pritchard. It is mid-season, but you know, it was definitely interesting to see this come up.
Yeah, what you're talking about, of course, is this was really the one big Celtics thing I wanted to talk about instead of just going through game recaps again like last week. Had an interesting comment on, I believe it was the Point Forward podcast, which is hosted by Andre Iguodala and former Celtic Evan Turner. Like you said, comment. It's interesting coming from him because you don't really think of Peyton Pritchard as an outspoken type of guy, and I'm not saying he was being, you know, outspoken.
I will say this here, but about Peyton Pritchard, that guy loves getting his fits off on Instagram. He loves posting fit pics and like carousels on Instagram. I respect it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, absolutely. But yeah, back on the comment, Andre Iguodala asked him, you know, he said, quote, walk me through the next 5 to 10 years of your career. Pritchard, the interesting comment that came from him, he says, obviously, after I'm done here, of course, being in Boston, after this year, I'd like to be a part of a bigger role a little bit. Andre Iguodala responded with, you should want that. And Pritchard went on to say, I definitely do. It's obvious what I work for. I think that's what Brad and them know, too. We had a discussion, but a bigger role. I want to be part of a winning culture, but I want to also help that be a really big piece of that. I'm not saying it's the best player on the team, but I don't know what my future holds unless I can take the next step. And just kind of went on to talk about, you know, little blurb about the next 5 to 10 years. But like you said, it's an interesting comment from him. Again, not the most outspoken type of guy. I can see where he's coming from, you know, not getting a ton of opportunity here. So he obviously wants to bet on himself, maybe go somewhere else. And, you know, he has maybe some legitimate gripes. His numbers have gone down this season, has not gotten a ton of playing time. And we kind of thought that was going to be the case coming into the year, especially when they went out and got Brogdon. That kind of pushed Pritchard to really the end of the bench when it comes to the guard position. But you kind of alluded to your thoughts on it. Any other kind of thoughts that stand out to you? I don't think really quick, I'm not saying this is going to be like a problem type of thing. Just to me, I think writing might be on the wall with him a little bit. You have a ton of guards. You're seeing now you might need some more. Definitely need some big man depth, some center stuff like that. I would personally go out at the trade deadline and maybe get another wing shooter, just so you take the burden off of Brown and Tatum. Pritchard's a guy, if he's making these comments, kind of coming out here and saying, you know, once I'm done here after this season, if he's not going to be back, I don't think it hurts to trade the guy, you know, move him somewhere. Maybe you can get him somewhere on a team that's going to make a little bit of a playoff run to help him out a little bit. But if you can get something for him, I don't think it's going to be the worst thing to trade him. That's the route I would take. I don't know if you would go on the opposite side, maybe give Pritchard more minutes, see if you can earn him here, or, you know, what's kind of your standpoint on this whole situation with him?
I don't think it's a guy you should, like, strive to move, but, yeah, shop him around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can find something. You might as well just get something for him. Like, he's valuable, at least to some extent. Not, like, super valuable, but, mm-hmm. yeah, I would try to move him in the right deal. While you finish this up, I'm just going to go quickly grab my iPad because I forgot to turn on the Bruins game, so.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, that's really all I was going to say about it. Because again, like Pritchard, I don't hate the player. You know, he comes in, has his moments here and there, but he's really just turned into the spark plug type of guy, especially on the nights where Sam Hauser is struggling. We've seen that time and time again of late that Hauser's kind of fallen off, has his moments here and there. Pritchard has some good moments, has some bad moments. But in the end, like I said, I'm kind of in the same boat Mike is as well. Like, you don't have to necessarily move him. You know, he is a decent depth guy to have. But in the end, if you can upgrade and get, again, a big man that can shoot a little bit, or just some depth for Horford or Williams in the playoff run, because you're seeing, you know, Rob Williams is a little banged up again. You still have Marcus Smart. You don't know really what the deal with his ankle injury is. So maybe that persuades the Celtics to keep Pritchard around a little bit here. But it is definitely interesting. I don't think they're in really any necessarily rush to move him, like you kind of said. Maybe they stick it out with him, see if he can, you know, play some more minutes down the stretch, see if he can get something for him. But just the timing of the whole the comment that came out, found it a little interesting. But again, I'm not going to harp on the guy too much. He wants to obviously bet on himself. And if he thinks he can thrive in a bigger role, if that's not going to be here, then all the power to him. He'll go somewhere else and hopefully make out a solid NBA career for himself. Because Pritchard's been a good guy on this team. You know, he's given you some sparks at times. But the minutes just aren't there. The playing time isn't just there. And he's kind of buried in the depth chart as we stand the start of February.
Yeah, I mean, you wrapped it up pretty well, but
thank you.
You know, get something if you can. If you don't, you have them. You know, it's true. One of those things you're kind of, you know, controlling your own destiny here. So
absolutely.
But that's a quick Celtics point before we get into football. We would have started with conference championship recaps if Tom Brady didn't retire
again
a year ago to the day. So Tom Brady, for good, in his own words, is done in the NFL. The long storied career is over. Three Hall of Fame careers. You think that would be enough to, you know, end the GOAT debate, but some people are stupid enough to still argue about it.
Still blows my mind.
As you have noted here, all the speculation can end now where he's going to end up. He finishes with a final record of 251-82 in the regular season and 35-13 in the playoffs, 7-3 in Super Bowls. Eligible for the Hall of Fame in 2028. And, I mean, I hate to be this guy, but, like, didn't really have much of a reaction to this morning because he already did it once.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I tweeted it out. I was watching a couple of highlight videos of Brady. Obviously, the Atlanta Super Bowl one is the one that got me the most, I think. And I said it, and I'm, like, watching the highlights, kind of it hitting me finally that you're not going to watch that greatness anymore. Maybe you will, because again, we, like you said, you've seen this happen before. He's come back. To me, watching the video this morning, seeing him and hearing him kind of not stutter towards the end, but get choked up when he said, you know, this is for good. And he starts rattling off all the people I want to thank. And you can see, you know, really kind of hit him hard as well. I think this is the one that it's it. I don't think he's coming back. The timing to me is weird. I don't know if you feel the same way as I do, because, you know, obviously we'll get into the conference championship games, but you saw the 49ers have maybe the biggest question mark at quarterback they've had in a while, with obviously Brock Purdy going to be out probably the entire next season. You don't really know about Trey Lance yet. Garoppolo. Whoa.
Brock Purdy's going to be ready for training camp.
I didn't see that. Did you see something else? I saw a tweet today that said there's a chance he misses the entire season, like 6 to 9 months potentially with recovery.
I swear I saw something that he's going to be ready for training camp.
Oh, maybe he is.
Probably going to be ready for training camp. What was it?
All right. Well, humor me on this, because I want to.
Says the prevailing medical prognosis suggests that his arm will be fully up to strength in 6 months in time for training camp. Nothing finalized, but the 49ers feel good.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. Because, yeah, I have it here in the outline, the Dov Cleveland report that came out, I think, today
as
well.
I'm not convinced Dov Cleveland is a real person. He's like an NFL persona. He mystifies me.
Fair enough. But yeah, that's what the one I was going off of is he said that obviously Brock Purdy needs Tommy John and is expected to miss about a year, according to notable orthopedic surgeon Dr. Mark Dickens, I think is how you say that. A return in 6 to 9 months is unlikely. So conflicting reports on him, but that kind of leads into the question I was going to ask you. Timing's a little weird to me because it looked like this was really going to be the first time Brady had a chance to maybe end it with the 49ers with so many question marks surrounding their quarterback position that maybe he'd take a stab if that became available. But then there's been some speculation today. I've seen, listening to Sports Talk Radio that said maybe it was going to come down to, again, go back to the Buccaneers or retire. And Brady took the retire route because of how maybe last year ended and how things went. So I don't know if you had any thoughts that you kind of alluded to it, that it didn't really affect you at all with this, but any thoughts onto that? Because obviously there was talks about the Niners, the Raiders, obviously reuniting with Josh McDaniels. The Dolphins said they wanted to go to Tua, but there's always rumblings about Brady potentially going there. Of course, there's some people that thought a Pats reunion could be on the horizon. But to me, timing was a little strange. Again, like you said, a year ago today, he said the exact same thing, but anything there that you thought of or not really?
Not really.
All right. Fair enough. But
if we got our speculation talk off and not much has changed since then.
Yeah, that's true. But
a little bit, but
yeah,
I mean, it's all over now. I think it's pretty clear that this is it with the emotion he showed at the end. 7 Super Bowls, 5 MVPs, 5 regular season MVPs, 15 Pro Bowls, 6 All Pros, most career wins, passing yards, and touchdowns, and made the playoffs 20 of 21 years. Has more playoff wins than 28 franchises, which is bananas. And yeah, 3 Hall of Fame careers. Just the best ever, and that'll never change. Nobody's ever going to top it.
No, you'll never get anywhere near this. Like, nope. Mahomes may get a couple of Super Bowls down the line, but it's never going to be anywhere near Brady's dominance. Like,
oh yeah, it kind of. I was looking at his stats, and he's got 89,214 total yards. I was like, damn, what if he got 90,000? That would have been nice to see. But,
well, that's okay. I'll ask you this, and again, you kind of answered the question earlier, but. Are you a little surprised just knowing about Tom Brady, knowing what he's all about after the year he had last year? I'm done making Tom Brady predictions because the last two times I've said there's no way he walks away. Obviously, of course, leaving the Patriots in free agency. And then when I was asked a couple of days ago what he's going to do this offseason, and I told a couple of friends of mine, he's going to the Raiders. There's no way after the way this year ended, going out to the Cowboys in the playoffs and finishing 8-9 and having such a down season for his standards that he's going to walk away. And he walks away. So any surprise at all that he kind of goes out, not limping out, but not of his standards at all? Because that's what, to me, it's like, all right, that kind of obviously didn't go as bad as guys like Favre did at the end of his career, where it was clear he couldn't play anymore. Or I don't want to say Manning because he went out, obviously, a Super Bowl champion, but you could tell there was a decline there in his ability. Brady kind of goes out on a little bit of a whimper here, obviously a great career. You've got the people talking that, maybe he shouldn't even have come back for this year because, what did it really prove or anything? Any surprise there that he walks away after a type of a downer season for him?
A little. I'd be lying if I were to say, no surprise at all. But overall, I'm not, tremendously shocked that this happened. Like, my jaw didn't drop when I saw this morning, so.
Okay. I was a little on the opposite side. I was like, oh, that kind of sucks because I wanted to see one more year. If he had anything, I mean, he has stuff left. It's not like he left it just a complete puddle of himself and wasn't able to do anything anymore, which is, like I said, that's what made me the most upset. It's like, this guy still has something in the tank. Again, it was obviously clearly tough for him to make the decision, but it is what it is now. Hopefully, just so he doesn't get ripped, that he stays retired, don't come back again after a couple weeks of mulling it over. But like you said, and I said as well, it seems like this is it for him. He'll obviously transition at some point. TMZ had the report. Obviously, when Brady has retired, he's going to do the Fox stuff. We know that with a 10-year, $345 million broadcasting career. This was from TMZ earlier saying that Tom Brady is not part of Fox Sports' plan for the Super Bowl next weekend, TMZ Sports has learned. That's not surprising. I didn't think they were going to rush Brady to try to get him onto the Super Bowl broadcast. Maybe they put him at the desk just to try to give some sort of insight pre or post-game, stuff like that. But
they do that all the time. They'd be stupid not to.
True. I mean, they do it with Gronk a ton. So get some experience for Brady before he obviously starts probably heading into, I'm assuming next season is when he will pick that up.
Honestly, on the flip.
Go ahead.
Honestly,
sorry.
I'd be surprised like about this if he didn't have the TV deal. Like, that's another thing. Like, he's had this TV deal the whole time, the whole season, waiting for him. That's why this is just not surprising to me, like, really that much.
Fair enough. You know. The one thing that does suck about this, though, is that you're probably going to lose Greg Olsen on the Fox broadcast, who's become a top-tier, you know, color analyst, I think, to terminology-wise. He obviously has leaps and bounds surpassed Tony Romo for the role. I was talking to a couple people. I said the other day, it's like, if I was CBS, I would look any way I could to get out of Romo's deal and then hire Greg Olsen if Brady's going to take his job as the number one play-by-play guy. They're not play-by-play, sorry, the color analyst guy. But Greg Olsen, as we saw in the playoff games, we'll get into in a second, I thought he was excellent. I'm sure you feel the same way, because I have fully come to your thoughts on Tony Romo. He is absolutely trash. And if there is a guy to replace him, I would hope it'd be Greg Olsen. But that, like I said, that kind of stinks that we're going to lose him in the broadcast booth because of how well he's done and how strongly he's come on over the last last year and a half or so, whenever he really started doing that.
See, unless people's contracts, you know, interfere with this, I think somebody will pick him up.
Okay. I just hope he doesn't, like,
he was too well received this year to not, like, I'd be really surprised if he didn't play somewhere else.
I just hope he doesn't get bounced to, like, the second or third string Fox broadcast team and he's calling, like, Panthers and
Texans.
Like, yeah, crap games
in the past.
No worries. But, you know, yeah, you get the point across. Crap games that nobody's going to see except for those, you know, markets obviously being broadcasted in those states and like I said, markets and stuff. But yeah, that's the one negative about Brady going to the booth. I think we had this discussion before. Any early thoughts on or any predictions on how he may do? You think he's going to be good at that job, or because I feel like he might be a little rusty, and I don't know if, you know, with his personality, if that's something he's going to be all that comfortable doing and be really any decent at.
I honestly think he's going to be really good.
Okay.
I think he's going to be really good if he's not corny. I don't know.
That's what I hope. Like, he's not going to be Romo, like, oh, geez, no. Level corny every time. Jim. Yeah.
Like, I hope he doesn't try to be Romo and, like, predict plays, like, all the time.
See, that's what made Romo good. That's the one thing that was redeemable about Romo early on, at least to me. And I feel like a decent amount of people thought that as well. Like, they liked that part, but now that's completely gone from his game. And he just provides nothing.
We get it. Like, you played football. Like, you don't need to try to do this, like, once or twice a drive, or like, it's just annoying. It got annoying quick. But yeah, I mean, I wish I would have had, like, you know, more proper emotional reaction to this, but that was
last year. I think a fair way to, Brady even said it in the thing too. He's like, yeah, the retirements, usually get like big speeches and stuff like that, but I basically wasted that last year, so I'm not going to do it again. So at least he was funny with it in that sense. Like, he knew that he wasn't going to put out the same crap that he did, or not crap, but you know what I mean? Same stuff he did last year, go through all that again, leave the videos and stuff for, you know, obviously the Patriots and fans like that to put out. But he was fine with it. He was, you know, a good sport about it and everything, which was obviously good to see. And again, a tough decision probably for Brady to make. You saw that with the announcement, and you and I are both in agreement. We think this is it for him. Move on, do something else.
Most definitely. I agree. But congratulations to him.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe he'll actually enjoy the retired life this time and not take us out. I don't think it's happening this time. Eagles and 49ers. Speaking of the 49ers, they went out pretty sad in the NFC Championship game.
That's for sure.
31-7. Just absolutely did not see this ever happening. Brock Purdy gets hurt pretty early. Josh Johnson, who's hardly an NFL quarterback, comes
that
in.
Sucks.
They were talking about, you know, when Johnson got banged up, that, you know, Christian McCaffrey might have to play QB. The Purdy injury was just a bad omen. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It really, really was. Coupled with, you know, the Eagles, things moving pretty smoothly as a whole, especially on the ground. It was just a recipe for a disaster for Niners and the Niners fans out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you saw that expressed pretty well. I don't know if you saw the clip of George Kittle's post-game interview where he was asked, like, how's it feel to lose in the NFC Championship game? And he was like, how's it feel to lose in the championship game when both our quarterbacks get hurt? Like, it feels pretty shitty. Like, he was pissed, clearly. I think –
and
I don't want to see
that clip. Remember, like, after they lost to the Chiefs, he's like, I will be back here. Like, I will be back here someday. Like, he was probably, like
– thinking he was going to get there.
Against the wall, excited.
Like, yeah.
for this game. Like, but you know, there's still time. He's young and the 49ers are good. So maybe we'll have that chance of redemption, but has to sting for him. He's a psychopath too. So he's got that competitive spirit. But man, this was a really tough way to end a really interesting and exciting season for the 49ers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a great win for the Eagles. I just don't know how you can feel like too great about it, knowing that like you didn't obviously sneak in by any means, putting up 31 points against a great defense. But like it was clear at the end of that game or close to the end of it, 49ers, like you said, are basically playing with Christian McCaffrey as their quarterback. They bring Brock Purdy back out to only throw, I think, one or two passes in the entire second half. So like, it's a NFC clinching game for the Eagles, but I just don't know how, like, if you're an Eagles fan, you can sit there and be like, oh, that was a great, you know, game that we went out and we beat Josh Johnson and Christian McCaffrey at quarterback. Cause I don't know. I wouldn't feel great about it. I'd be like, oh, maybe there's some fraudulence to this win. That's not to take anything away from the Eagles, of course, but to me, kind of the big thing that stands out, and we've talked about, I think, Kyle Shanahan before when we had the show at Merrimack and my thoughts on him. He's a great coach at getting teams to the big moment, obviously doing this with what he had to go through this year with the 49ers and obviously losing Lance and Garoppolo and having Brock Purdy play so well. But this game to me, and again, I don't know if you feel the same way, if you feel differently here, but to me, it showed that he's incredibly overrated in the big moment. Obviously right out of the gate, he doesn't challenge the Devonta Smith catch, which was on a couple of replays, a clear drop. Smith himself even was trying to get their offense to the line, being like, let's go, because I didn't catch this football. And then you said it, Josh Johnson is basically a pretty sad excuse for a quarterback. Like, the guy's been in the league for...
Shout out to the maybe the gold standard of journeyman, though. He's played for like 21. Oh,
absolutely. Yeah, I won't take that away from him. But like, the fact that this guy came out and looked like he had never played the position before, knowing that he had played for half the league, it seemed like...
He's the ultimate, like, dude, what the fuck? Like, I didn't expect to play in this game.
Yeah, guy. Yeah. Oh, clearly, when you fumble a ball pretty much almost off your face, like on a snap. But that again, that's another thing to me that kind of makes it seem like Kyle Shanahan's a little overrated. Like, you couldn't get this guy up to speed at all to at least look serviceable in this game, because he looked like he had never played a football game. Obviously, you're in the NFC Championship game. There's going to be a ton of jitters and stuff like that. You're probably crapping your pants out there. But he just looked so lost. He had three delay game penalties, like, right away when he came in. So I don't know, like, I don't know if you have any thoughts on Shanahan or if this is just me kind of on my soapbox again with him, but we've seen it time and time again. Obviously the Patriots Falcons game when he was there as the OC, we talked about in the Super Bowl with the 49ers against the Chiefs, kind of handed Kansas City a Super Bowl win there by not running the ball late, decided to throw with Garoppolo. Like, he has these moments where it's like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you need to be better in these spots. And after so many F-ups, you'd think he'd kind of catch on here, but it wasn't the only reason the 49ers lost, don't get me wrong, but just kind of his stupidity shining through again, I think, is a little telling of this guy.
Yeah, I really don't have much to add. I think you summed it up, you know, pretty well. As, you know, I feel like anyone in your camp and in my camp feels about Shanahan. I think there's, you know, pretty wide consensus in this regard. As you have noted here, the defense did not do them any favors. 11 penalties for 81 yards defensively, which is just pretty much unheard of. Like, that's
literally shooting yourself in the foot. Like, I think the Eagles had one drive that had four, it was a helped by like four or five penalties for the Niners. So
yeah, like, another bad omen in this game was Fred Warner getting hurt early. He came back, but
it was not himself. Yeah,
like, best player on the defense real early, like, that's tough. It's real tough. But yeah, really disappointing if you're a Niners fan. You know, they've got a lot going on with them already after this season. Jimmy Garoppolo all but gone, confirmed, as if we didn't already know that, by Shanahan.
Exactly. Yep.
Their pick that was originally with the Denver Broncos changed hands. We'll talk about that a little later. But yeah, a lot going on with the 49ers, and you know, Jimmy's out of the mix, but we get to see, you know, as the offseason progresses, how the Purdy and Lance storyline goes off, because you got Lance recovering towards the end of it, I imagine, and Purdy just getting started. So it's pretty unique, but, you know, tough ending for the 49ers. You know, one of those beat who's in front of you situations for the Eagles.
Absolutely, yep. It's a good way to put it.
It kind of gives you, at the same time, a hard, you know, task to get a read on the Eagles, because we know what they can do, but, like, they haven't really been challenged so far in the playoffs, and the Chiefs aren't going to roll over for them in the Super Bowl.
No, it did. the Chiefs will be the toughest task they've seen all playoffs. I was listening to Greg Bedard the other day on Flagler and Maz, and he said the Eagles, if you're going off, he had some advanced stat, strength of schedule, one of those type of things. He said the Eagles had like the easiest strength of schedule the entire season and then have not really had any change to that in the playoffs, obviously having to steamroll the Giants and then get a completely banged up 49ers team. So the Chiefs will obviously pose a tough task. They do that to anybody. But like you said, it is tough to get a read on Philly because, like you said, they run the ball so well. They've done it the first two playoff games. Their defense is very good. Their offensive line play is obviously elite. But, I mean, their offensive line took a hit today with, I can't remember the guy's name, but another
Josh idiot. Sills, I think.
Yeah, another moron getting arrested before the Super Bowl. That's become a pretty nice trend these last couple of years.
Josh Sills.
Yeah.
Rape and kidnapping charges.
Yeah, 10 days before the Super Bowl. That's great. Way to throw your career and life away. Like, yep. Nice. Way to go, stupid. But, yeah, the Eagles, I mean, they are a tough team to get a read on, but you could also say like they're not because they've just, again, it's so crazy because they've dominated for the majority of the season. But then again, you have a flip side argument of, you know, who do they really play? They're going to get the tallest task, obviously, in the Super Bowl. So we'll see, obviously, how they look in that.
Yeah, we shall see because, like you said, the Chiefs are not going to roll over. And they squeaked one out against the Bengals in controversial fashion. 23-20 in the AFC Championship. Chiefs are going back to the Super Bowl for the first time since they did against the 49ers. We all know what happened there. But the
dynasty. Start of a dynasty. Yep.
Dork dynasty.
Yeah.
Joseph Osai with one of the, you know, craziest what ifs. The late hit. I saw people, you know, going with the replays after this. There was a late hit. The Chiefs had at one point. There was a hold missed on the Chiefs. You know, you can go back and forth, missed calls. You know, I think the one hold on Orlando Brown was pretty egregious that they missed. That was tough to look back on. But look, I think this was a late hit, but I don't think you call that at that point in the game.
I really?
Don't. I really don't. I was really disappointed to see that because I think it was definitely worthy of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in that situation, you let it go like 100 times out of 100. Like it wasn't like – it's not like he cracked him Ed Reed style. Like
true, but on the flip side of that,
the Chiefs won the game in regulation because of it.
And oh, absolutely,
that's what drives me nuts about it.
No doubt about it.
It's different if whatever happens after at least OT fresh slate. I absolutely hate seeing a game end like that, and I think they definitely could have let it go.
I agree with
probably not, but I wish they did.
In that spot, I agree with you in the sense that maybe they could have let it. The odds were stacked against Osai as soon as he went to make that hit. You're going at, not going after, you know what I mean? You're hitting a wounded Patrick Mahomes, like you said, with a chance to put the Chiefs in the Super Bowl like that. With how this game has gone down, and again, I don't want to make it seem like I'm just going to come up here and say the game was 100% rigged. I'll put it at 50%. The Bengals did plenty wrong in this game to lose it. The Chiefs did enough to win it. I'm not going to take anything away from Mahomes because he played really well, obviously, given the situation. But like,
played better than I thought he would.
Absolutely. Absolutely one of those did.
Situations, too, where the league's going to protect their stars.
That's the point I was trying to get to. I got caught rambling a little bit, but like you have to know in that situation, again, know where you are on the field. And the fact that you're going after a wounded Patrick Mahomes, like as soon as you touch him, that is going to get called. Like I get your point where it's coming from. And I'm sure there's plenty of people that argue the same as you do that you can't call that in that spot. Cause it literally won a team the game. But on the flip side of that, what are you doing? Don't touch the guy going out of bounds. He made the argument that, you know, you kind of got lost on the field. Didn't really know where he was out of bounds. I get you have to not make an excuse there or try to defend yourself in it, but like, you have to know the situation better. You have to know what's on the line and who's on the other end of the hit. Like it's going to go Mahomes' way 1,000 times out of 1,000. Cause that's just the player he is. And like you said, they're trying to protect the quarterbacks. So they've made that obviously the big thing. That's what's going to happen. You mentioned a couple of the plays too, the other stuff that was just completely missed. You know, you have the roughing the passer doesn't get called on Burrow, gets shoved down by Frank Clark. That was a clear roughing the passer. If that was the other way around, you know, Mahomes was going to get that call. I thought the weak pass interference on Mike Hilton on Marquez Valdes-Scantling, where he kind of turned him around, but not really. The intentional grounding penalty, I think, was the most egregious out of all of them because Burrow literally threw it into the feet of P. Ryan, and they didn't think that he was anywhere in the area. You have the block in the backs on the punt return. You have the multiple holds on the Mahomes scramble that led to the Osai penalty. So you could definitely make a case, I think, that the NFL was leaning one way. Obviously, now we have the storylines that have already gotten tiresome of the Kelce Bowl. You have Andy Reid facing the team he used to coach. Like, I don't want to say the worst thing was that the Eagles won the early game, because that kind of set this up, but I'm very curious to see. Obviously, we obviously can't go back in time. If the Niners won that game, how many of these calls maybe would have, you know, not been called? Again, I'm just speaking in complete conspiracies right now, but like, I think there's a decent amount of people that share the same thought that, like, especially the end of the game, the biggest moments, all the calls kind of led, you know, towards Kansas City, or lean towards Kansas City.
Yeah, it's not the craziest tinfoil hat argument you can go towards. I'll say that. I could see it. I mean, it's just immediately it was like, oh my God, you guys are going to believe this. Brothers are facing each other. Who's their mom going to root for?
Yeah. They're going to have the stupid split jersey.
Like,
I would care.
This
like
is if, the worst fucking Super Bowl possible.
It is. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Like, it's a Super Bowl that I fully am trying to talk myself into watching. Like, it might be the first time I'm going to watch it. I'm going to say that I might not, but I'm definitely going to. But it's one of those things I texted you where I'm like, I'm just going to tune in to watch the commercials and the halftime show and see how Rihanna sounds. But
I might watch on mute so I don't have to hear the announcers be like, wait, did you guys know they're brothers? Are you, you know, the storyline in this game, like, they'll look at their mom in the stands. Like,
I was going to say, thank God the game's on
Cincinnati to the Super Bowl facing each other. Like,
thank God the game's on Fox. Like, if Romo had this game, it's just, it would be worth watching on mute, because you wouldn't be able to stand it. But the whole brothers thing, like, I would understand that more if it was like the Cowboys going up against the Bills and you had the potential of Stephon Diggs getting guarded by, you know, Trevon Diggs. You have two guys that play different positions that will never face each other. Like, tight end, center, they're not going to see each other on the field except for handshakes and hugs at the end of it and, you know, consoling the other when they lose. Like, there's nothing to talk about in that matchup. Again, the Andy Reid against his old team thing, you know, maybe that's interesting to some people. You know, I've seen some people argue about,
fuck.
Yeah, exactly. I don't either. Even like the Harbaugh Bowl was a better storyline because it was two coaching minds going up against each other. And you would get to see who would one up the other in certain plays, stuff like that. Like the Kelce v. Kelce thing, I have no interest in, because like I said, they're not playing each other. Like they're playing each other's team. The teams are playing each other. Like I said, it would be so much better if it was the Diggs brothers going up against each other and seeing, you know, would one shut down the other.
Yeah, it really
there's nothing to this.
That's a good point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
This sucks. It really does.
On the flip side, though,
it was cool in this game to see B.J. Hill, you know, come to the
That was a come to his aid at the end. That was a good moment
thing to do. It's just absolutely like, for any player, but like for a young guy like Osai, you know, definitely emotional there for him to step up there. It was pretty cool to see. You know, just one of those things where the emotions get the most of you, and you know, to have a teammate step up and try and make you feel better and, you know, take the burden off a little bit. It was cool to see, but
on the flip side of it though, really quickly, cause I don't want to, again, I didn't want to make it seem like doing this game recap that it was just all the Bengals got screwed. It was all just Chiefs all the way with the referees and the calls and stuff like that. Like I said, the Bengals did plenty wrong in this game to lose it. You know, I'll get to the pregame and week leading up to the shit talk that they just could not back up in the slightest, that I had a decent problem with, but just some of the mistakes in the game, like the Chiefs are down to just, what was it, Marquez Valdes-Scantling in the game, because so many guys left with injuries. You let him beat you a ton. I know the offensive line for the Bengals was banged up, but like, you can't just let Chris Jones run wild on you. I know he's a tough guy to stop, but him and Clark were dominant in this game. 5 sacks for the team as a whole for the Chiefs, 12 quarterback hits and 6 tackles for losses. The Bengals had plenty of mistakes that they made. Like I said, I don't know if you had any problem with how they handled the punt at the end of the game. Very similar to how the Jets handled it with the Patriots, punting it right down the middle of the field and letting the Chiefs return it to, what was it, like the 45-yard line or whatever. The Bengals' decision with, you know, 7.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter, 2nd and 3, you throw a deep ball to Ja'Marr Chase, which is an incomplete, almost picked off. And then you have the ball to T. Higgins, 3rd and 3, you bomb it downfield. That ends up getting intercepted. And then the couple of touchdowns they gave up, fourth and one, a 14-yard strike to Travis Kelce ends up in the end zone. And then third and 10, Marquez Valdes-Scantling goes for 19. So Bengals did plenty wrong in this game. Don't get me wrong. I don't want to take anything away from the Chiefs because they did enough to win the game. But it was just such a weird game. Cincinnati was in it, even with the mistakes they made up until the end. And then obviously the floodgates opened for the referees to get involved and stuff like that. But any thoughts on just how the Bengals handled everything? Like I said, particularly the pregame stuff, because Mike Hilton and Eli Apple talked a ton of crap and didn't really back it up at all in this game. No surprise with Eli Apple because he's the worst corner in the NFL. Hilton obviously had a good game against Buffalo, but then he just got beat like a rented mule a ton in this game. So a lot of ridiculousness going on.
Yeah, I mean, I hope, you know, this wasn't a Mayor's Bet situation, but I really hope we can just, can we just stop in all sports doing the goofy mayor stuff?
Yeah.
I hate it so much.
Well, that's what the amount of people that had a problem with that. I mean, I get that maybe the comments were a little out of, you know, out to lunch, you know, out of left field here, stuff like that. But it happens in every sport. Like mayors make bets with each other. They talk crap with each other. This is what happens. That was the problem I had with the Chiefs. And the thing I was going to talk about is, can we stop with the Chiefs are like being doubted here and that everyone's coming after the Chiefs? Like the Chiefs have, I don't think, ever been doubted since Mahomes got there.
Yeah.
Like they've been the top tier team in the AFC for the last 5 years. There's a reason they've been in five straight AFC championship games. No one's counting Kansas City out of any of these games. So all that talk is just absolutely ridiculous. And you know, I didn't have a problem really with the, I don't know if you feel the same way, the Burrowhead stuff, because Joe Burrow had owned.
Who cares, dude? Like,
yeah, exactly. Like, I didn't have a problem with it. And
like, I understand why the players did, but.
I get it. But like, we talked about it beforehand, and you brought up the point that, you know, if Burrow were to beat him in this game, that you could make the argument that Burrow is the top quarterback in the league over Mahomes, at least in the AFC. So, yeah, I mean, until he had beaten him, I think you have all the rights to say that Burrow was, you know, the better quarterback, obviously, in the matchup. So the Burrowhead stuff I didn't have a problem with, really. But just on the whole, like the Bengals kind of talking it up beforehand, like they had won a Super Bowl, hadn't really been there and didn't really back it up. So just the whole situation for this game was weird. And of course, how it ended didn't help things either. So very weird AFC title game, but entertaining nonetheless.
Yeah, I mean, my biggest takeaway from all the comments and stuff is like, it's so fitting that Travis Kelce made a Rock comment from, you know, when he was in the WWE.
Mm-hmm.
Because
calling the mayor a jabroni.
That's where I want him to go and fuck off from the NFL. Just, because yeah. I hate, he's so cringy that Rock. Oh, it was so bad. It's so hard to watch. I really hate him.
People wonder why people hate the Chiefs. Like,
and oh, I've always thought he's just like, he's this wannabe Gronk, like future WWE douchebag persona guy. And that just put the crown jewel on it.
Absolutely.
He sucks. We'll get to our preview and shit like next week and prop bets with friend of the program, Mike McCollin, if he's around.
Right. Yep.
I'm rooting so fucking hard for the Eagles to win the Super Bowl. Like, I hate the Chiefs way more than I could ever hate the Eagles. If we were, you know, a little closer to the, you know, Eagles Patriots Super Bowl, I'd have a problem with rooting for the Eagles, but I don't. This core is easier to root for with Hurts, Brown, and Smith leading the way on offense. I have no problem rooting for the Eagles when it comes to the Chiefs here. Like, it's not even a question.
No, I'm right there. Like, it's tough. I hate both teams with a passion. I hate both fan bases with a passion. I mean, there's definitely guys on both sides, like you said, Kelce, to absolutely despise rooting for. To make it timely for the people that have been watching it, I'm not going to do predictions, like you said, until next week, but I am 100% hoping for the Cordyceps Last of Us virus to rear its ugly head in this world and just infect everything so we don't have to watch the Super Bowl. I'd be 100% content with that. That's how far egregiously I'm going to say and go with it. Cause like I said, I make the joke that I'm just going to tune in for the commercials and the halftime show. Cause there is really nobody other than like, I don't know. Yeah. I like AJ Brown. I like Jalen. I like Hurts. So I root for the Eagles, but I just hate both fan bases, both teams so much that
I think they should play this 10 miles west of Boston and not broadcast it.
There you go. 10 miles west with the mountains and the woods and the river, the giant-ass river that runs through it. Yeah, that's –
I was talking to some friends at work at Cumberland Farms. They should have had an infected cordyceps zombie person trying to buy scratch tickets. Like you see every time you walk into a Cumberland Farms or like a convenience store, like a 7-Eleven, somebody buying gas not gas station, like convenience store lottery tickets for 5 minutes. Trying to hit some fortune.
Or trying to play Keno or something.
Outside of that, some other quick NFL points. Sean Payton was traded to the Broncos. I didn't even see this until 2 hours after it happened last night.
I forgot it was a trade, to be honest. Like,
The Broncos traded the 30th pick and a 2024 second. This is fucking bananas for a coach.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
To the Saints. For Sean Payton at a 2024 third, according to Ian Rappaport, was their plan B after D'Amico Ryans went to the Houston Texans. Maybe the first coach ever to join a team as head coach that he once filed a lawsuit against. This is for dangerous conditions on the field a little back in the day. So, yeah, we got former Houston Texans making news this week with the Arian Foster stuff and the NFL rigged and D'Amico Ryans going back to the Texans. So the Texans are in the news even in the offseason. My big takeaway from this is it is fucking insane to trade a first-round pick and a second-round pick for a quarterback. I don't care if you're getting a third. That is insanity to do. That is absolutely nuts to trade that much for a coach.
Well, yeah, especially when the Broncos blew all their future last year trading for Russell Wilson. Like, yeah. What picks do they have left?
They don't have a first. It's funny, the two first, they had in their hands – one's in Seattle's from the trade, and the one they had now is obviously in the hands of the Saints.
Not good.
This is just a wacky trade to me. I get it. They're clearly desperate. I think Sean Payton can do more with Russell Wilson than Nathaniel Hackett did, obviously. Mm-hmm. But this is just wild to see. Like, it makes me wonder, if the Patriots ever traded Belichick, they better get two firsts.
I was going to say, it has to be two firsts and something else.
Like what the hell, dude? This is insane. Yeah,
that's ridiculous. I saw a tweet that said Payton was, their third option. So there were a lot of conflicting reports.
Yeah,
obviously, Rappaport and Schefter. Yeah, we're going at – not going at it, but had different things. I can't remember who the third person that jumped in was.
Maybe it was the mysterious Dov Kleiman or Kleiman.
It might have been. So, again, that fits the mold of do we trust this guy or not.
I trust him. I just want to know what he looks like. Why doesn't he show his face?
Oh, he's one of those people that has, I think, the fake – cartoony avatar, so he'll never know.
That was pretty nuts.
It and was, the, yeah. I don't really Saints have any
the first round. So
yeah, good for I guess. Just gonna say I don't really have any other overarching thoughts other than yours that Sean Payton massive amount of trade for out. A coach. Yeah, again. Oh, that can you imagine if it doesn't? The Broncos suck again. Oh. Russell Wilson somehow. I think I'm right there with you. I think Payton's gonna get something out of him because I think there's still some ability there. As bad as he looked this year. But God forbid that both these guys don't work out. It's going to go down as two of the biggest screw ups in sports history, trading all this capital away and just destroying your franchise for two guys that could potentially, I'm not saying Sean Payton's going to be washed, but again, God forbid this move doesn't work out either.
Yeah. Shit, man. But I think that's going to wrap it up for football talk. Mm-hmm. As we shift to Bruins, as they play the Maple Leafs right now, we talk about it every week, it's more of the same for the Bruins.
I want to apologize for that comment last week. I fucked the Bruins over big time. I said that this was going to be in a normal season. Tough games coming up, but they'll probably win them because they've been so dominant and they've hit their longest losing streak of the season. So I'm sorry for saying anything. I'll try to talk as little as possible and not make any Bruins predictions because I don't want to have them go off on some sort of massive losing streak again.
Yeah, I mean, your fault, nobody else's. So
I take full blame, 100%.
Take your frustrations out on Ryan.
Yep.
Tampa Bay to start from last week's show to now, it was 3-2 in Tampa. Omar played good for the most part. The Hagel goal was tough to start. The defense just decided not to cover him. That wasn't great. Marchand scores on a snipe. Zaka scores on a nice little play with the check line. But the dagger in the heart here was, Braden Point just moseying his way through the neutral zone, leads to Victor Hedman just teeing one up, and that's the end of it. Tough way to lose, just a start of a consistent theme, I think, in this past week of games, you know, very lackadaisical defense from the Bruins. That was especially apparent in Florida, where they lost 4-3 in overtime two nights later. Swayman makes 33 saves on 37 shots. Saw a little bit of the old Craig Smith. He made a nice play on a pass to Clifton tonight, too. Maybe, you know, we're seeing Craig Smith creep back into the mix a little bit. Not much you can really do about the Montour goal. I mean, it was a tip on a moving screen. Really weird one. Then you have Coyle send a butterfly towards the net, and Sam Bennett just whack it right into the net. Don't even know what he was thinking.
Brutal. Yeah.
McAvoy was not going to score, and, like, the odds of getting it over the net, you know, reacting that quickly to do it are just so low.
He looked like he was part of the offensive rush on that. Like, he had no desire whatsoever to knock that to the corner.
It was so weird. And with the poor goalie, Mac, I thought it was Mac Guzda at first, the rookie that they had called up at one point. But I'm not sure who the goalie was, but it might have been Alex Lyon. But whoever it was, like, that's just tough. Like,
yeah,
you're going to
no
call
chance.
Up when,
yeah,
with Bobrovsky out, you know, you're giving Spencer Knight a little rest, and that happens. He is pretty tough. It's okay, though, for Sam Bennett, because the Bruins just let him score later in the game.
Yeah,
untouched, unbothered. Sure. That was pretty weird of them. Pasta scores number 38 late in the third. Number 38, you know, almost hitting that 40 mark. Second star of the month. For the month of January, had 13 goals and 8 assists, 21 points in 14 games. And then Alexander Barkov plays spoiler late on just pure chaos behind the net. Buries one. Reinhardt, way too easy in overtime. Buries the OT winner. I think the Bruins got hosed in this game. Carlo got cross-checked in front of the net on the Barkov goal, ruining really any chance he had at being able to stop the scoring chance there from Barkov. But, you know, it's one of those things that is a little bit of a moot point when the Bruins really did not play very good team defense all night when it mattered the most. So that's really the big storyline in this one. Just a tough loss on the road and a tough way to lose it, but kind of self-inflicted wounds. So yep. Yeah, you got to just kind of hope to rectify those in the future. But it did not, you know, start with a second half of back-to-back win in Carolina. They lost 4-1 to Carolina. Omark made 32 saves and 35 shots. Really dumb turnover by Pasternak on the Aho goal. Fortuitous bounce, you know, leads to a quick goal for Stastny. Carlo brain shut off a little bit. Then Seth Jarvis takes it and comes in. Taylor Hall scores one. Jordan Staal scores a shorthanded empty netter. Pretty rare.
That's
and the Bruins
bad, yeah.
lose their third in a row, coming off of a 6-game winning streak. Now they're on a 3-game losing streak, hoping to snap it before the break against the Maple Leafs as we speak.
Is there a score in that game? Sorry.
No,
nothing. I got the Celtics game on right now. I'm trying to get an idea of both. They're currently up 30 points, I believe. Yeah, 30 points, 46-16 at the end of one for the Celtics over the Nets. So Kyrie really came to play tonight. You said any thoughts on any of these games? Is that what your question was?
Yeah, any other takeaways from this past week?
The Tampa Bay and the Florida game was aggravating as all hell to watch, just because, like you said, how it ended. Obviously Pasternak scores a great goal late, but then, like you said, Barkov plays spoiler with like a second left on a kind of a fluky, not a fluky bounce, but a weird bounce off a deflection, or a block shot. I think Bergeron went down and blocked one. And then the Reinhardt goal in overtime, like you said, stunk. But two games where it's like, you're in it, you fought in those games. Obviously the Florida one, you fought back and came up short. The ending, not great. Not being able to close out games has been something that's been a problem for them of late, but that's something you can fix. The Carolina game was the one that really kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because it was the first time I feel like all year the Bruins looked like they were thoroughly dominated up and down, and that's obviously evident of the score. So, again, I'm not going to sit here and hopefully, again, not jinx them and say, like, oh, this team, the sky's falling, they have legitimate problems, and they're going to go on, you know, now a 6-game losing streak, coming off a 6-game winning streak. But the Carolina one was just kind of eye-opening. Just because, the other two games you were in them, and it was a typical, you know, back and forth type of Bruins fight. The Carolina game really wasn't, so that was kind of an eye-opener one for me. Like you said, the defense hasn't played great. I don't know if I'm coming off my stance that I want them to maybe get another defenseman or just stick with a depth for the trade deadline. We'll obviously get more into that when it becomes closer. But yeah, right now, you know, we were kind of waiting for this, waiting for them to go through a little bit of a lull in the season. It kind of stinks that it comes right before the All-Star break. So now you have all these games off that you're going to sit and kind of stew in all these losses. So hopefully, like you said, they can right the ship against Toronto tonight. But I don't know, maybe, you know, another loss going into the All-Star break wouldn't be the worst thing for this team. Just because, again, you have all this time off to sit there and go, okay, well, you know, we need to figure some things out here, get back on track, and then come out of the All-Star break strong. I'm not going to, you know, again, go too crazy over this because I think this is something they really needed all season. They really hadn't faced a ton of adversity. They're facing it now, so we'll see how they bounce out of it and bounce back.
Yeah, I mean, as I wait for this review, no goal. Yeah, I don't know what the fuck they're even reviewing there. That was weird. I guess they think it kind of blended in and with Omar's goalie pants and maybe snuck in. That was a weird review.
Well, it is up in Toronto, so.
Yeah, you never know. Mm-hmm. Speaking of Toronto, we saw Brad Marchand going to.
Yeah, what's his deal? He's just going scorched earth on everybody on Twitter.
He roasted Steve Dangle. He's been going at reporters.
Is there a reason? Or is he just
herps on people's lips? And
yeah.
Harry,
he just wake up and choose violence today. Like
he does this sometimes. Okay. And it's awesome. It's the best.
Fair enough. It's, I just like, didn't know if I missed someone, something, and like somebody pissed him off or something. And I'm like, oh, he's just gonna go off on everybody now.
It's, dude, like this league that's hemorrhaging for viewership. They're down like a bunch. I think Mark Burns said today they're down. Their viewership is down.
Mm-hmm.
You need guys like this to kind of spice things up a little, and that's what Marchand seeks to do.
I saw a tweet, I don't know, I can't remember who it was from, but it was like, the NHL needs a shit heel, and yeah. Brad Marchand is that guy, and it's 100% needed and wanted. Like, so no problems with him going after people, but, oh yeah, I just saw that replay. I don't know what, I'm with you. What are they looking at there that didn't kind of come anywhere close?
Weird as hell. Yeah, he's been going crazy on Twitter. That's been really funny. Recommend checking that out for anybody who hasn't. Other news in the NHL, the Vancouver Canucks traded Bo Horvat sooner than a lot of us probably expected, I'd say. They trade him at 25% retained to the New York Islanders, of all teams. Wouldn't have expected that. Would have expected Carolina or Colorado, perhaps. But he ends up an Islander, and it's an interesting trade because my first thought was that Vancouver could have done better than the return they got. And it kind of seems like, you know, from what Kevin Weeks said, I don't know how long this was after the trade, that this was kind of their first, you know, stab at it. They're like, oh, we got this offer, let's take it. And they had another offer out there. I think they absolutely could have done better in this deal.
Okay. How so? Explain yourself.
I'd love to, because it really is perplexing to me. Look, they could see this as an opportunity. You know, he helps us get in the playoffs. This is from the Islanders' perspective. And that's good if we can sign him long-term. Or they flip him. The Canucks could do the same with Beauvillier. They could just, you know, see Beauvillier as a tradable asset, sell off a bunch of pieces. Look, the Canucks did not get enough here. It's a top 12 protected pick. So if it gets into the top 12, you have to wait till next year. And, you know, maybe the Islanders are good and you get a pick in the 20s or 30s. But, you know, it is worth noting next year if it moves. It's not top 12 protected, so they could, you know, potentially get the first overall pick next year. Anthony Beauvillier is a depreciating young forward. He just seemingly kind of falls into oblivion more and more each of the last two seasons. He's got like 20 points in 40-something games this year. Nothing crazy. But, you know, I kind of feel like I didn't really talk about how valuable the pick is because it is, you know, 2023, so they do get that in a stacked draft. But Atu Ratu is pretty good, like a pretty good prospect. The guy once thought to, you know, potentially be the number one pick in the 2021 draft. Fell all the way to the second, third round because of, you know, he didn't really live up to the hype in his draft season. Falls to the Islanders in the second or third. I forget when they got him. Looks pretty good in the AHL. You know, scored a couple goals when he got called up this year, so maybe he's a good young player for the Canucks. But look, I think they could have got better players. I think they should have waited. I don't think they needed to make this trade this early. But luckily for the Islanders, they did, because if the Islanders are going to make the playoffs this year and make a push, Bo Horvat's going to be a part of it in a big way, and the sooner you get him, the better. So I think the Canucks, you know, didn't get enough. I think the Islanders, you know, this blows up in their face. They can't sign him, sign Horvat. But it, you know, it could blow up in their face opposed to the Canucks. Like, what if they get Horvat and don't trade him and then don't make the playoffs? Because it's not a sure thing.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on. It kind of makes your head spin a little bit with this deal. And I'm really surprised with the timing and the team he ended up with. Really odd. And I don't know, Rutherford and Alvin in Vancouver could look kind of questionable.
Kinda dumb. You know,
their return doesn't turn out to be great here when all is said and done. But yeah, this trade confused people due to the lack of true contender status with the Islanders, and rightfully so.
Seems like one of those is like maybe like a spark plug type of move to say like, yeah, hey, we made a move. Absolutely. Okay, right in the middle of the season, try to boost some guys. From a dumb person that doesn't follow hockey as much as you do, explain these two players that were, and because you said Beauvillier is not, you know, a great player. In terms of Bruins players, like, what's the comp for these two guys? So I have a better understanding of, like, did they get, because like you said, you didn't think they got enough. Like, what would this type of trade, if it was the Bruins doing the trade, what players would have been going back?
Yeah, that's a good question, because I talked to a couple of friends about this. I think the equivalent to this for the Bruins is a top 12 protected pick. Well, it's different for the Bruins pick because, you know, they're projected to finish so much higher than the Islanders. So maybe there is no trade, you know, draft protection. Other than that, you're giving up Brett Harrison or Matthew Poitras, who they just took in the second round this year, and Jake DeBrusk or Pavel Zacha, but most likely Jake DeBrusk. The Canucks, we know, like Jake DeBrusk.
Okay. I did see, yeah, they've inquired on him again.
Yeah, it's realistically a 2023 first. More likely Brett Harrison and Jake DeBrusk, which in the right scenario I would do. I don't think I would this year, though.
No.
Maybe in the past, but not this year. You know, now the focus shifts towards, you know, trying to sign Horvat long-term for the Islanders. From the standpoint of the player, Bo Horvat, he's having a career year. He's having an elite season. From a player standpoint, they did need a guy like this. The Islanders do not have a high-end goal scorer on that team. They just don't. They have guys that can produce. Bo Horvat scored 34 goals this year. He is a guy that this lineup so desperately needs. Was it at the center position? I don't think so. I think, you know, a guy like Timo Meier or Vladimir Tarasenko would have suited them better. But, you know, Bo Horvat, you know, if they put him on the wing or center, is undeniably a good goal scorer and a good player. This isn't anything new. It's, you know, a little bit spiked this year with him having a career year. But I like the intensity from Lou Lamoriello because he's a little mysterious, and he proved to be mysterious the year again because I don't think anybody was really betting in on him going to the Islanders. I wonder if this is stemming a little bit from missing out on Johnny Goudreau as well. They wanted to make a big move.
Yep.
But we'll see how it pans out. It could go really well for both teams. It could blow up for both teams. It's really one of those types of deals.
Win-win, lose-lose. Like,
yeah, we'll see. But it's a really interesting one to dive deep on. We had another minor trade drop a little bit after last week's show. The Avalanche reunite with Matt Nieto, who used to play for them, and get Ryan Merkley, who requested a trade out of San Jose, former first-round pick. You know, potentially to be a really solid offensive defenseman in exchange for depth defenseman Jacob McDonald, who looked good in spurts for the Avalanche last year, and former first-round pick Martin Kaut. I like this deal for San Jose if they can get something out of Kaut, but it's really just swapping depth pieces and, you know, giving Ryan Merkley a change of scenery to see if he can make something out of himself in Colorado. But for a young offensive defenseman, I like Colorado as a landing spot for him. So I think this could work out really well for them. But yeah, just another minor trade. Things are slowly kicking up. They were slowly kicking up until, you know, we saw it go from Ryan Merkley and Matt Nieto to Bo freaking Horvat.
But one end of the spectrum to the other.
Maybe we see the dominoes start to fall sooner than the trade deadline this year than we may have expected it. You know, we got Timo Meier still out there. Maybe he'll be the next big guy to move. But we shall see. But it was nice to see some trade talk, you know, get the get the juices flowing before the deadline this year. But I think that wraps it up for hockey before we get into a quick Red Sox trade. You know, we're not done on trades.
Yeah, I was going to say it's a good transition from NHL trades to baseball trades. But yeah, I've got nothing else. Like I said, just wanted to get to know a little bit more about the players going in case, you know, there are some people that were like, oh, because it always brings up the question, you know, oh, could the Bruins have made this trade? You think maybe they could have, but I think you and I are both in agreement. I don't know if I would. But you said you maybe would trade DeBrusque for him. I don't know. I'm on the fence, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Not this year.
We talked about it last week before I jinxed him that, like, things were going well from a chemistry standpoint. You don't really want to mix that up, or not to say that Horvat's, you know, a bad guy to bring in by any means, but like, you just don't know how he's going to gel with guys compared to how well, you know, DeBrusque obviously fits in with that first line. So why take the chance?
Yeah, exactly. It's, you know, anybody who listens to the show knows my stance on the, whole trade front right now. So
gotcha. But yeah, on to the Red Sox. What'd you say?
No big moves.
There you go. No big moves in that, that terminology. On to the Red Sox, because I think we had last week's show when they we talked about them DFAing Matt Barnes. Didn't make a ton of sense. This week they get something back for him, or a couple days after they get something back for him, rather. They acquired left-handed pitcher Richard Bleier from the Marlins. This was according to Craig Mish, who's a Miami Herald sports writer. He said the Red Sox are also sending, quote, approximately $5 million to Miami in the trade. Bleier from 2022 was pretty good. 50 and two-thirds innings of work, a 3.55 ERA. Left-handed hitters hit 256, so he is going to fill in as the most likely the second lefty in the bullpen, to go along with Jolly Rodriguez. Of course, the Red Sox. What's up?
He kind of replaced Josh Taylor in that lefty.
Just going to say he's a more defined Josh Taylor, because obviously, like we talked about with Taylor last week, there were questions if he could stay healthy. Bleier has stayed healthy, knock on wood. And it's been pretty good. Tyler Milliken had his numbers during his time in the AL East, because he's been around in the AL East with the Yankees and the Orioles. From 2016 to 2020, 177 in the third innings pitched, a 2.99 ERA for the advanced stats. Still don't know what a FIP is because I meant to look it up. But a 3.74, I have to assume that's pretty good to go along with the lower ERA. 4.5 Ks per nine, 1.5 walks per nine.
Fielding independent pitching. I knew that.
You knew that?
I knew that, but I had to Google it. I guess I forgot.
Gotcha. No, fair enough. You know it more than I do. So, Bronny points for you. Okay, tell me what an ERA plus is then. What's that off the top of your head?
It's an ERA plus.
Gotcha. All right, good. A 150 ERA plus. Again, I have to assume that's good. And then again, the home runs per 9.6. So another guy that keeps the ball in the ballpark, which is good to see. Milliken's tweet also had ton of soft contact. 90th percentile barrel percentage last season. If you're really going into the nerd stats, there you go. One of his highlights or lowlights, if the name sounds familiar to baseball fans, I don't know if you remember this or have seen the video, saw the video on Twitter. He was called for 3 balks in 1 inning this year against the Mets. That's an MLB record. Not a record you want to have.
I hope that's a record.
And is anybody there like, oh, great, this guy's like a moron out on the mound. A couple of the balks were like ticky-tack, like barely didn't come set, but still a balk. I'll put it this way. I'll get my thoughts out of the way quick, and then I'll kind of transition to you, hear your thoughts on it. In a season, an offseason that has not been a great one, in my opinion, a lot of moves that I've just been kind of meh or just don't really care about. This is one I like. I like actually getting something for Matt Barnes, because you and I were both surprised that he was the one that was getting DFA'd to begin with. He himself said he was caught off guard the other day, but had no hard feelings for the Red Sox. So that's good to see. Bleier, he's a cheaper option too. This is from Jordan McPherson, the Miami Marlins beat writer. He said that Richard Bleier will make $3.5 million this year with a $3.75 million club option for 2024 with a $250,000 buyout. Matt Barnes is due to make $8.375 million in 2023, has a club option for 2024 of $8 million or a $2.5 million buyout. The trade gives the Red Sox close to $13 million left to spend in free agency. So again, it's a move that saves you a little bit of money. It's a guy I like. You know, he was good during his time in the AL East, as we said, has had some success. And like you mentioned, he fills in as that second lefty to replace Josh Taylor and gives you a little bit more of a defined left-handed guy out in that bullpen. I like it. It's a move I can get behind. I'm not going to go, you know, too much in depth with it because, you know, it's not a flashy move by any means, but one that's, you know, pretty easy to get behind and a smart move. One, I'll give a mini win to Chaim Bloom for, because you got something for a guy you probably didn't really have to DFA to begin with, or probably shouldn't have DFA'd, but nonetheless.
Yeah, now you lose a piece from what, the Benintendi trade in Franklin Kerman?
Yep. So, well, that's on the flip side of it.
Ryan Brazier and Caleb Ward, as you have noted here, continue to survive for some reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, again, I don't want to jump completely into being negative after I just, you know, the rare praise of Heimblum, but if you were just going to DFA Herman to begin with, why DFA Barnes in the first place? The answer is money. Richard Blyer is going to make less money than Matt Barnes this year. You save some money with the trade, and then you just end up DFAing Herman in the first place. But then, like you said, Ryan Brazier's still here. Caleb Ort, who got shelled last year, is still here as well. Herman, as I talked about last week, I thought was going to be safe because he had the youth side of things. And like you said, he was part of that Benintendi deal. So you maybe want to try to get something out of that deal other than just him and Winkowski. But now Winkowski is just the remaining piece of that deal because Franchi Cordero was part of it as well. He has, of course, gone to the Orioles. So another confusing decision. I'd have to assume a Franklin Herman trade of some sorts might be coming because this is a guy I really, you know, had some upside this year coming in. I think he was the Red Sox minor league pitcher of the year for Worcester. Get something out of him if you can trade him instead of just giving him away for nothing. But who knows how they're going to do with that. Like I said, the bigger the deal was the Blyer trade. Don't hate it. It's a move that works. I feel like you're probably in agreement as well.
Yeah, I don't really have any complaints here, to be honest with you.
Fair enough. That's all for Red Sox stuff. Like that's they make one little move. I'm sure like if they do move Herman, it'll probably be within like 20 minutes when we're done or maybe tomorrow or something. Still on the market for a middle infielder was the other thing that I saw today. I don't know why they're just kind of letting it play out. If I was them, I'd just bring back, I've said it before, bring back Jose Iglesias if you need one more infielder. Because like we talked about last week, you don't know if Mondesi is going to be able to hold up. I would go Jerickson Profar. I think he's still out there, you know, a veteran utility guy that's had some success from both sides of the plate. Can play, like I said, multiple positions. Go get him. But if you want the familiarity, go get Iglesias and fill out the rest of the roster that way.
I'm in the same boat, dog.
Okay.
That is going to wrap it up for episode 128 at 8:28.
How about that?
Yeah, how about that? What a happenstance that is. You can follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at Mike_Crady. You can follow Ryan at Ryan_Salvaggio. And you can follow the show at Silent Crady Pod. That felt weird because I usually say you can find us wherever you find your podcast first. And you can find us on TikTok as well. But yeah, we'll should be back next week. Unless we have a company outing scheduled for me that I would have to attend. The plan is to be back next week with old friend of the program, Mike McClellan, if he's around for Super Bowl prop bets and more. So stay tuned for that. Stay safe, stay healthy, be nice to people and all that good stuff. And we'll talk to you next week. Peace out.